Hello and welcome to Humans of Magic. My interview this time is with Victor Adame Mingus. Victor is a very talented magic artist and illustrator. And in this one, we're going to talk about his creative journey. There's also a ton of fun stories, like the auction where Victor sold his original Gris painting for... Actually, I don't want to say how much it is. You'll have to listen to the episode. Victor was quite an open book. He talked about things like magic celebrity, meeting his wife, what it's like to actually work as an artist for Magic the Gathering, and also his new project, which he is developing as a way to combat burnout from illustrating magic art. And so I found the conversation incredibly candid, and I couldn't help but smile or laugh as I was editing some of the episode. Victor is just an open book, and I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did recording it with him. Here's Victor Adame Mingus.
Hi, my name is Victor Adame Mingus. I am a magic artist. I have been so for 10 years. I live in beautiful sunny San Diego, California, but I was born in Mexico, and that's it. That's who I am. I mean, that's not all of it, but I am more things.
Yes. Let's start off with maybe a bigger question. I feel like sure. All creative people have a non-linear path to get to where they are today. I know that today you're doing magic and fantasy art. You've been doing magic for perhaps 10 years.
Right.
But what was your metaphorical wilderness? What were some of the biggest things that you had to figure out on your path to doing what you're doing now, which I assume is sort of what you really want to do? Like, what was that journey like for you? And you can describe it in any way you want.
No, it's actually pretty simple. I needed to know what level I needed to be at. What skill level I needed. And I needed to know how to get there. How to get there and who to talk to. So figuring that out was one of the hardest parts, because once you're told, like, hey, you have to, you know, be like that person, or your art has to be comparable to that one, then you have a goal. Like, you know what to do then. And also, like, I mean, it's simple. It's like weight loss, right? Like, it's just so simple. Just, you know, calories in, calories out, stuff like that. But actually doing it, it's a hard part. So knowing what I had to do and who to talk to, like, that was the hard part. And also, once I talked to the right people, they gave me feedback, they told me what to do. So now it was about doing it and finding out the tools that I needed, gathering all the knowledge and the skills to, like, actually get there. And it took me a little bit, but once you know, like, once you have a goal, then it's just about following the steps.
That's a hard one, though, because it requires some sort of self-actualization realization. So how did you even know what goal you wanted to pursue? I don't know if you intended to always do art for a living or not.
No, like, I in Mexico, like, that was not a thing. Like, you've heard about comic book artists in Mexico or Guillermo del Toro, people like that, but it's not realistic, right? It's not something that you strive for. But I was always, like, you know, good. So that was a possibility. It was just about, like, finding how to monetize it, like finding a industry or something. And it was magic, actually, that it got me that that, like, eureka moment when I started playing Magic. I saw the little names. That's actually my card. You see the little names on the corner, and you're like, I got introduced to Magic by a friend, and he's like, you know, these people work for Magic, and they get paid to do so. And I'm like, okay, like, that sounds cool, but I don't know if I can do that. Like, I don't know how, like, who to talk to. And then it was until I went to college that I had a friend who lived, I think he lived a couple of years here, and, like, here across the border, and he was, like, a very big fan of Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con. So he always like used to like come and go to Comic-Con whenever it happened. And so he told me like, like there's people, like there's scouts for companies. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna look it up. So, eventually that's what we did. Met up with Wizards people and everything else after that was pretty simple, easy.
That's incredible. So you actually had magic in mind as a young kid, just wanting to break into, like, I see the art on the card, I want to be the person that creates the art for that card.
I had
Wow.
like multiple plants
Right. Different
because it's
paths, right? Yeah.
right, yeah. But no, nothing's for certain. I like when it comes to art, like you don't know that you're gonna make money. Like you play it safe and you assume that you're not gonna make money. So I was thinking comic books or whatever I could do. And actually, that's what I did before I started doing magic. I started doing illustration for independent creators, publishers, and not publishers, just authors, just like
You
independent
illustrated
authors.
covers for authors, that's my understanding.
Yeah,
Okay.
and stuff like that, like small things. And I, eventually thought that if I just kept going, I would get to the bigger clients, and I did.
Going back to something you said you're always good. How did you get a lot of validation from friends, family, people around you about artistic ability? Okay. And you're just kind of born with it, right?
I don't know because I always used to draw and so did my friends in elementary school. And we were all like pretty like same level. Like we were all like competing against each other who could draw the best Dragon Ball Z character. But I feel like my interest was greater than theirs, and I just kept doing it all the time. Like for them, it was just something they did at school whenever they like whenever we were bored or
Sure.
during recess. But I just kept doing it, and I just kept doing it and doing it, and it was something I did all the time. And eventually, I started like excelling at it. Not to say that I excel right now, but because I
Oh,
feel
I would
like
definitely say you're up there,
thank you.
but did you, what was your practice methodology like back then? Did you just try to replicate Dragon Ball Z characters? Like, were you completely self-taught? Did you start, like, how did you do your practice and your thing back then?
I mean, I was like 10. And that's I feel like it's different because 10 year I feel like 10-year-olds now are doing a lot of things.
It's
They
crazy.
have like the internet and they have all these tools and stuff, but back then like I was 10, I was just messing around being a kid.
Sure.
And so yeah, like trying to replicate the characters or getting comic books and not tracing, just like copying the comic books. And then that led to me trying to do my own characters or like draw my own things. But there
So
was no
you.
like point of comparison. There was no something that like for Dragon Ball Z characters and anime and cartoons, like yeah, like if you did it exactly the same, then it was good. But for something that there's no comparison, then how do you judge it? Right, so that's where the validation came from. School friends and family were always like validating or asking me to draw stuff for them. So then like there's a saying, I don't know who said it, but it says just be the best you can at something and someone eventually would want to pay you money to do it. So that's like when you know. I mean, it wasn't a lot of money. It was it was change, but it makes you feel good when you're a kid.
Was there ever a plan B, or was this always going to be the thing that you occupied your mind and your future career with?
No, like that was it. Like
You're
I
going to
joke
make it no
around.
matter what.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna make it or fail. But I don't know what would have happened if I had failed. And so I tell people that I don't have any other skills. I mean, I guess I'm bilingual, but who isn't? Like, that's not that's not a job. that's it. Like, honestly, that's it. Like, I have no other skills. I didn't know what else to do. Like, I don't know. And like right now, I've done questions with my wife, stuff like that, and there was one that said, like, what would you do if you didn't do what you're currently doing? And I have no idea.
Be a bilingual something. I don't know. Translator.
I don't know. I thought like translator, English teacher.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Did you also teach for a while? Was that something you did part time or full time?
I taught when I was in college. So I taught a painting class for high school kids while I was in college.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy
it? We were
that?
Almost the same age, which was awkward. Huh?
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. It was cool. Like, I didn't do it for the money because the pay was terrible. I honestly don't remember why I did it. It's been a while. But yeah, like, I did enjoy it. I think it was, like, just, like, labor experience, work experience to get something in my resume. But it was fun because high school kids, like, they don't want to do math. They don't want to... I mean, some of them do. But most of them are kind of, like, distracted or just want to, you know, mess around and have fun. And art is something that anyone can enjoy. So I was pretty open. I was like... Like, there's art for everyone. Like, there's no excuse. Like this is not a chore. Like, this is something that you should enjoy. Mm-hmm. So, like, pick one. Like, pick something. Mm-hmm. Out of, like, all the history of art, like, there's got to be something for you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be painting or drawing. It could be, you know, something else.
Right. So you were the cool teacher that everybody liked because you were just creative expression. Let's just do your thing, you know?
I mean, I was put in that position because I was the art teacher. If I had been, like, I don't know, gym teacher or something, not that I could ever be, but yeah, I mean, you're the art teacher. It's gonna be fine.
Right. I'm loving this conversation so far because
thank you,
I
me
feel
too.
Like everyone that I talk to, and you're no exception, who is quite accomplished, and I would say you are quite accomplished. Like,
thank you.
There's always this tendency to undersell what you've done, and it's like, in a way, it's impossible to sell what you've done. Like, how can you describe to somebody in 10 minutes, like, exactly everything that Victor's gone through? But I feel like you skipped over a bunch of details. Like, for example, how did you even start building a portfolio and actually selling your work? Like, what was that process like? I'm really curious because there was a whole number of steps you had to go through before you could even be considered to be a magic artist. So I'm curious about the early years of Victor Adame, in a way.
Building a portfolio. Yeah, that's also one of those easy things that requires a lot of work, but it's simple. Like, you just find the company, find what they're looking for. And magic is not... it wasn't how it is right now, where they have, like, a lot of styles and, like, with secret layers and all those things. Like, anyone, like regardless of style, can do it. But back then, it was a little bit more narrow, where it was, like, the high fantasy, realistic, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, finding the company, find out what they want, and just doing it. And...
Right.
And I was fortunate to meet people from Wizards at San Diego Comic-Con that were scouts, but also gave, like, their art directors, like, they also gave me feedback as if I was one of their artists. So they told me, like, work on this, this, and that. This is what we're looking for. So I got, like, pretty concise feedback as to what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a matter of trying and doing it. Like, I didn't get in the first time I applied. It took me a while. It took me four expensive trips to San Diego until I did it. But it was, like, every year, like, they would tell me, like, you're better than... It was the same person 2 years in a row. And I was like, oh yeah, like.
So it was like tryouts, like you get some feedback, like, you know, yeah, come back, you know, work harder on this, and yeah, maybe some directional feedback kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you have a style that was already quite congruent with what Magic Art Direction was? I assume it had to be, because it wasn't like you had to do a 180 on your art or your style, or like there's like, is it, are we talking about some tweaks, or like, can you give me an example of like just inside baseball, like what kind of things did they tell you in the early days that you had to go back and maybe rework a little?
Well, basically card art has its own rules, and I just had to know the rules of card art. The style was, what I was doing was fairly similar. Like, I was doing fantasy already.
Yeah, you said high fantasy, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I was doing a lot more sci-fi than I am right now. But card art, like, it, there's like, as I mentioned, some rules. I'm going to pick one of my cards right now. Or people can look it up on the internet. But it has to have like a strong silhouette. I don't know if that's a good example. It has to have a strong silhouette. It has to be believable. It has the character, which is what I did. I didn't do like magic spells, instant sorceries. I focused on creatures. So it had to be doing some sort of action within an environment. And bonus points if there were other characters around supporting that action. So that was one thing. And also, like, bringing back to that, knowing what you want to do, right? Like, if you're a landscape artist, you know, doing the lands, like, focus on the lands. And that's, has, like, a completely different set of rules. Spells, artifacts, that sort of thing. But my thing was always characters and creatures.
I'm sure you get this question a lot, but this question is almost too deceptively simple. But is there something that you might advise somebody if they want to make art for Magic? Like, was there something in particular that, or things in particular that worked for you in your past?
Yeah, specialize. Because honestly, like how I said, Magic has changed a lot, and I don't know what they're looking for anymore. I know that I get constant work all the time, but for someone starting out right now, just be as good as you can possibly be. Like, just get as good as you can be. Learn a lot. Specialize on a subject. Like be the best you can at it, and eventually, like, you'll get noticed. It might not be for like the main line Magic products, because they want something specific, but, you know, they're always doing specialty secret layers and like all these kind of different arts.
So it's one thing to be so dedicated to the craft, like Jay-Z locking himself up in his room like 3 summers in a row to make beats or lyrics, right? Like, obviously you have to make great art, but what are some of the intangibles? As you mentioned, going to Comic-Con or San Diego a couple times, I assume there's a huge networking, or also like selling your work or putting yourself out there, that's quite important for artists. I don't know if I'm reading too much between the lines,
but not as it used to be, because yeah, back then, like, you had to know not people in person but online, and the communities were small. Social media was not as big, or at least like artist social media. Like, right now you can connect with anyone you want. But networking is important, but I feel like what you said, like selling your work, like that's more important. In like my position where I sell the paintings, but that's different. People skills, yeah, it's a cliche that or not a cliche, like I feel like, yeah, most of us are introverted.
Cliches can be true, that's why they're cliches, right?
Most of us are introverted, and I am too, when it comes to, like, I don't know, football and stuff like that. But when it comes to art, I'm very extroverted. Like, I can talk about it for hours and hours. It's just like, train those people skills, like develop those people skills. And like if you know that you have some weakness, work on it. And yeah, intangibles. There's a lot of stuff that is not just art making. It helped me because like right now I run my auctions. I didn't used to. I had an agent, and like just like being hands-on, you talk to the people. You talk to your clients, the people that are actually buying your artwork, and you know what they want. You know what they're looking for. They tell you about themselves. You establish meaningful connection and like even friendships, and you establish connection with them, and I feel like that's really important.
Right. I mean, I was introduced to you because of a fan of yours that was listening to Humans of Magic, and he said, James, you should interview Victor, and here we are. So I guess yeah, you do make that connection with your, I'll call them fans or people who enjoy your work, right? And I feel like there's no right or wrong way, I think, because like with any kind of creator business, some people choose to outsource or delegate it to, like, for example, most artists, I think, have agents, and sometimes agents like take care of a lot of things. It sounds like you do some parts of it yourself, whereas maybe other things you may delegate to somebody else, right?
Yeah, I do have agents for all sorts of things, for the signatures, for the artist
Right.
proofs.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I want to delegate
Yeah.
as much as possible, but I feel like there's some aspects that you like have to do. Everyone's different, right? This works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just like to do it. Like that was one thing. Yeah, and I used to delegate my auctions, but I felt like I was missing something. And honestly, like for me, they're fun.
Okay.
For a lot of people, they're a headache, but
Is it
I enjoy
fun to
them.
see like, oh, there's interest and like the bids are coming in and who's bidding on that? Yeah. There's a kind of a rush, right? Dopamine.
It's like buying a lottery ticket. Like the
Oh.
anticipation, like the moment,
You
like
just don't know, right?
up to like knowing that, or up to like the moment you lose because no one wins. No one that I know wins, but like that window of time where you're like, "Ooh, this is exciting! I could win," and just like seeing the bids come in, and
What's the
also,
craziest auction experience you've had?
one where I set a buy it now, it was achievable, like it was up there, it wasn't unrealistic, but I was not expecting that.
You mean someone
And
to just buy it right away, or what?
yeah, it was Grist. Yeah, Grist the Hunger Tide. So that was like the craziest one, because I think yeah, the buy it now was 35,000. Yeah, and I set it up like I want, like
Achievable, but no one should be buying it now right away because we're bidding, right?
It depends. So like I set the buy it now. Look, I love my art. I like the effort and the work that I put into it.
Yeah, one of one. Yes.
Like yeah, like I believe it cost that. Like for me, like if it was up to me, like
Right.
100,000. Like for all the work that I put into it, I feel like that's what it should cost. And I wouldn't like BS people and put like a super high up price just like to make, to embellish it, make it seem that it's worth more. Like that's what I wanted to get for it. But the market's different, right? Like it's worth what people are willing to pay for it because it's a commodity. So I had set up the 35K buy it now, and people were like bidding slowly but surely, and I think it got to like 10 ish, and someone was like, "You know that, screw it, like I'm just gonna buy it." And I'm like, and it was almost immediately, it was for first day.
It was probably going to close at less than 35K, but someone just really wanted it.
You never know.
Oh,
It's
it could have gone over.
always a gamble, like auctioning paintings and also like offering them private. setting up your own price, you could lose money. You can make more, or even if you auction them, you can lose money, or you can make less. So you never know. It's always a gamble. Like, there's never a sure way.
That sounds like such a tough thing. It's almost like, how does one even learn that stuff? And you probably have to learn through the school of hard knocks. Like, you probably have to make a misstep here and there to really calibrate it and figure it out, right? Yeah. There's no school for that.
Yeah, like, I've had people offer a certain amount on a painting, and then I'm like, no, I'm not going to take it. I'm going to auction it, and then ends up being lower at auction. Oh. Stuff like that.
Okay. I'm just wondering if now you have a pretty good, you must have a pretty good grasp of at least your market value and the market value of your works, right?
Yeah. Like, it's not math, but yeah, you see like a trend. It's more an art than it is a science.
Yes, it is an art.
It is an art.
Yes. So, tell me about some of the initial works you did for Wizards. What was that like? Just initially working with the art directors, and just what was it like? And maybe how is it different from what it is now, which is obviously going to be much more mature and established 10 years later? Like, what were some of the first commissions you got? Do you remember, like, your first?
Oh yeah, I have them right here. Yeah, it's hard for me to say because one, it's been so long, and the sets and the releases were very different. I feel like now, yeah, like my first one was Bastion Protector. I'm looking at it right now, and then Garapor Gearcrafter, Valorous Stands, and I did a couple pieces for the books. Mm-hmm. Like, remember they used to put up art books and stuff, or like like the story beats.
The
Oh yeah, they still do that. I'm just not doing those anymore. But the story that they publish, like they have some arts that art commissioned especially for those, for the story. Mm-hmm. So I had some of the origin one for Liliana.
Didn't you also do the board game?
Right, yeah, I'm looking at those right now. Yeah, the board game. Whatever happened to that? Board game. Then some Zendikar. And honestly, like, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I was just having fun. And it just felt so... like, I didn't have to.
I
want to
dig into that. Were you having fun, or did it feel like there was some pressure, like you had to prove yourself?
Oh, of course, yeah. But that was fun. Like I still have that, but not so much anymore, because back then I was new, and it's not complacency, but maybe it is. Like, being established and
it's just different now.
Yeah, and like just having like your skill sets validated over and over, like you kinda get used to that, or confident. Maybe like even arrogant at some point.
Well, it's earned too, right? It's just like, if I did something for 10 years, of course I'll have the experience to back it up.
Right. So yeah, back then I was like really, really, what did you say? Like, how do you call it? Like, trying to prove myself there. Yeah, there you go. And also like,
yeah, maybe a proving ground. Yeah.
Yeah. And also like not competing, but also like measuring myself against my peers. Like seeing what other people were doing, and I'd be like, oh, like that's really cool. Like, I wanna be as good as they are. And so it got to a point for me where because I was doing digital art back then, specifically, that was one of the things that I learned through the industry, or that I assumed that people wanted digital art. I don't know why I assumed that was the case, and everyone had one of these Wacoms.
And the tablets. Like
that. Yeah, sure. Tablets. So I assumed that that's what, you know, that people wanted, but it was not the case. And then it got to a point where it was getting repetitive. Like, I was just doing the same thing over and over. And I feel like I got in a rut and I needed some change. And that's when I started doing paintings, oil paintings. also the
so you started account. Doing paintings after you started illustrating magic cards?
Oh, much, much longer. Yeah, like I'm flipping through them right now. So I'm like Ravnica, War of the Spark. Like I was still doing digital art. And then one of my first ones was a core set. I did Disenchant, but like fully, it was Theros. What was it called? Well, where they go to the end. What was the last Theros? Not the first one.
I don't remember either. I have to look it up.
It's been a while.
It's too many.
Yeah, but Theros. And then after that, I kind of like went back and forth. I had some Eldraine. Oops, sorry for the boop. Some Eldraine pieces that were digital, and some of them were traditional. And I was just like trying to get the hang out of it, because it was really hard at first, like meeting deadlines and also maintaining a level of quality. I was taking 4 commissions every wave, but after started painting, I just took 1 because it was just so demanding.
Was there ever any doubt to switch over to oil? Was there any doubt, anxiety with making that transition, or were you just confident that that's the way my art is going to be?
No, because I could always go back. If I messed it up, I could always go back. And also I had, like, I did traditional painting. I always did oil painting in school, so I knew how to do it. It was just a matter of time, like repeating that until you get to a certain level of quality and speed. But I already had the foundations digitally. It was just a matter of like doing it in physical medium over and over and over.
So you strike me as someone who's always been quite intentional with where he wants to take his craft or his creative work. Like,
thank you.
Is that just a commonality with magic artists? Like, I'm sure you've interacted with many magic artists. Is that what a lot of you folks are trying to do, is like upgrade your skill set, try to figure out where the path is going or where the industry is going? Is that an important mindset or attribute to have?
It depends. I can only speak for myself, but like it depends on what your goals are. And it's like, for me, like I would just wanna have like the stable magic commissions and like just like do it and collect the paycheck, and that's like amazing. But I at one point I get bored of it. I feel like everyone does. Like if you're like doing the same thing over and over, you kind of want to change. You want to challenge. But also I feel like there's folks that have, you know, kids and stuff, and that's a challenge. That's a huge challenge. So they want a stable job. And like for me, like I don't have responsibilities like that. So I'm like always like looking like for new things, stuff to do. But I honestly feel like every artist is like that. I don't know, but I assume so. Everyone's always like trying to get better and like find new and interesting things to do, and also like because we're told what to do, right? Like we get a brief, we have to follow the brief, but like we have like little windows where you can explore your creativity. Like you can, you know, do things differently, like outside of the brief, or I mean within the brief, but you know.
Yeah, there are constraints, but you can play within those constraints or make some things open-ended.
Yeah, so I feel like we're always like looking for that and trying to have fun, because yeah, that's like the thing, like trying to have fun, like enjoy it, and getting a commission and thinking about like, okay, how am I gonna make this fun for me? Like how am I gonna do what the client is asking me? How am I gonna make the art director's work easy? And how am I gonna have fun? And I feel like that's always a challenge, and always like the problem solving that we're encountered with. Mm-hmm. That I feel like every artist that works in magic, or that at least the ones that I interact with, are like that.
So, don't name any names, but do you feel like there have been artists that you've interacted with or know about that have sacrificed their own fun to sort of fit the other concentric circles, like stakeholders and expectations, to the point where they're kind of just completely doing it as a job? There's no actual fun or enjoyment because they're just trying to make something that they know other people want.
No, I feel like if that happens, 'cause it
They
was
wouldn't
like,
last in that position then,
no,
right? Like,
like
I guess,
you wouldn't do it. Like, you would stop doing it. If you're not enjoying art, then I feel like there's other careers that are better, for that.
This is kind of me poking, but I'm wondering in your career with Magic or with Wizards, were there points where you came close to being challenged to continue or feeling like, this might be the last straw or anything of like that? Were there any challenges in that 10-year path where you felt close to burnout or however you want to call it?
Right now,
Tell me about it. Tell me more.
so I don't know if you follow me on Instagram, but I just posted something on Instagram not too long ago, basically announcing me like taking a little step back. Like, I'm still gonna work for Magic, but I've told my peers and art directors about it. Yeah, I have a post on Instagram. It's a small rant, but actually say, like, I feel like I've gotten to a point where I want to explore different things, and I want to do my own thing. Like, I always wanted it, and I feel like it was a mistake of mine to stop doing personal art, and I was just like doing client work, client work, client work. And once I did my secret lair, that I got complete creative freedom. I was like, whoa, like, this is
You felt
awesome.
it. You felt that again.
And I was like, I don't know if I can go back. Like, this was like amazing. And there's like commissions here and there where you can have like a lot of freedom, but they're like few and far in between. And I wasn't getting, I feel like old Magic was more like that. They were like, oh, just paint like, a cool knight and or a cool, creature, and that was it. But now it's like a little bit more specific, which is good. Like, if you're trying to build a brand, you need to like be tight, like have that like aspects tight.
It's just trade-offs.
Yeah. But yeah, right now, like, I'm feeling like I need a, not a reset. Like, I'm still doing Magic. Like, I'm gonna continue taking Magic
But
commissions.
you want space for your personal projects as well, it sounds like.
So I was doing around 16 paintings, a Magic commissions every year. And this year, I think I'm doing five.
I'm not an artist, but that sounds like a lot. That is,
Yeah.
you're doing oil paintings.
Yeah.
Literally, it's more than one a month.
Yeah. More than one a month. In
You've been
December.
grinding, my friend. You've been
December.
grinding.
Yeah. I know. I have, like, I don't know
They
if,
talk about magic players grinding. Like, what about magic artists grinding, right?
like, I didn't grow up poor. I come from like a very comfortable middle class family in Mexico, so we didn't need a lot of things. But I feel like I always had like that mentality where it's like, I need to keep going. I need to like make more, do more. And I feel like I've heard that from people that have escaped poverty. It's like, even if you're well off, like, you like that's still in your brain. So
It's kind of
yeah.
like an actor, right? Like,
Yeah.
when an actor gets a lot of work, they've had all those years where they didn't. So George Clooney is still, maybe that's a bad example, but like, just insert name of like famous actor who's
Yeah.
still in Hollywood. Like, when they get hot, they're doing, I don't know, how many movies a year, right? Like,
Yeah.
I feel like there's that, I don't know if this is the right term, but like kind of a scarcity mentality. It's like get going
Yeah.
while the going's good kind of thing,
Yeah.
right? Bank it
And
while I
it's
can.
yeah, and it's really good, right? That's the thing, like, I kind of, yeah, it's kind of like if you see it from like the money point of view, like I'm doing so good right now when it comes to the market, like my paintings are sought after and people are paying good money for it. Like I'm one of the
Yeah,
top people.
35K for that grist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, a friend was like you just like you just got here. Like it takes a long time to get here. You just got here and then you quit. And I'm like, okay, I'm not one, like I'm not
You're
quitting.
not quitting.
I'm just taking a little step back because I
Yeah.
want to find that balance. And it's some there's something that I really want to do and that I have the freedom to do it right now. So I'm gonna take that opportunity.
Yeah.
But yeah, to your point, I last December I did five paintings. And that was a lot.
Just in December.
Yeah, 1 month I did five paintings. That was a
Did
record for
you
me.
sleep?
Oh yeah, I did. But I woke up at 6 a.m. every day and stopped working at like around 8 p.m.
Yeah.
And that's not great.
So all your waking hours, pretty much.
Yeah, that's not great if you want to have a life.
Yeah.
And
And you're running auctions and other things too. You have
yeah.
to maintain your business.
Yeah. And like, you know, a family and yeah, like, you know, live to work to live, like not the other way around. Don't live to
Yeah.
work. Yeah, but yeah,
You yeah.
burnout's real. I'm sorry. Burnout's real.
No, I was just burnout is real, and I was just
Yeah.
going to ask, like, you mentioned having a decent background, as did I. I've had a decent middle class background, so I was never, for me, it was never like, oh, am I going to be able to eat tomorrow? And I understand that for some people, like, pressure makes diamonds, but how did you make that internal, like, your grinding mindset? Like, where do you think that came from? I'm just trying to, like, how did, like, did you always know how to work hard, even when you're, drawing Dragon Ball Z characters or what?
No, I feel like I was just dedicated. I feel like I have a very obsessive personality, kind of an addictive personality at some points.
So you do something and you're just like, I want to do it to the max or to the best
Yeah,
way.
and I just got to like that. I don't know. It was always scary to like not make enough money. Like I knew my parents were not going to support me forever, and then my dad was terrible with money. So like he didn't like make financial decisions for the future. It was just, you know, that was it. And I could have like been okay, but I knew I had to like do something, like do it, and that was always scary. And maybe it was overblown, like that's, you know, stress, or you know, you always think about like the worst possible outcome, and I was always thinking about that. But yeah, I don't know.
It's also an impossible question when you ask somebody,
Yeah.
like, what makes you who you are, right? Like, there was no other life that I lived other than the one
Yeah,
I
no.
lived.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I grew up and I, you know, did things and went to school and lived life and somehow like that made
Yeah.
me and
Have you ever thought about it? Was there like a counterfactual alternate reality where there was a Victor who didn't work as hard and is like doing something else?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I never think about that, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
Just
feel
keep
like
moving forward, right?
my life could have taken like different turns at like certain points. And I feel like my life would have been different. I'm glad it didn't. It was like it's like right now where I am like I'm so happy right now. Like I'm married to the most amazing person in the world and we have a great house. Well, we don't have it, we rent it, but still pretty cool. We live in a great place. Like everything's great right now and I'm like so glad that it did not happen another way. But yeah, I've thought about it. I'm like I feel like everyone's, you know, thought about like what could have been and I'm glad that it wasn't that.
All right, I'm gonna risk a tangential turn here.
Sure, go for it.
How did you meet your wife? for your partner, because I saw your Instagram post where you said that she was a big help for you at MC Chicago, and yeah. she seems like someone that obviously you guys are soulmates. Like, how did that happen? Is she an artist, or is she?
No. I always like, no, she's not an artist, but I always tell her that she's very naturally observant, like, of those things. Like, she's very intuitive about those things. Like, I always ask her and to come take a look at my paintings, like, hey, like, what do you think about this? Like, she's always the first, you know, round of feedback that I get when I'm, like, insecure about something. And she's usually very, what's the word that I'm looking for, James? Just, like, naturally, you know, intuitive about those things. So we actually met in Chicago about, oh God, I'm so bad with time, 7 years ago, 2017, and we met online. And that's not, like, the romantic start that you want, but, you know, it's just a start. It's not about to start.
Oh, no, I know lots of people who got married and have great relationships through meeting online.
Yeah, my sister met her husband online. So that's, you know, that's how you do it these days. Internet, you know.
Did you know right away that she was the one?
No. I knew I liked her a lot. And the thing is that we were, like, we just met, and then I went back to, because I was living in Mexico back then. And I went back, and I was like, oh, crap. Like, I don't want to lose contact with this person. Like, I really like her. Like, I want to keep, you know, chatting. And then we talked every day, like, since the day we met. Like, we just, like, talked every day on online and or on the phone. And I found, like, through, you know, because I'm freelance, I can do whatever I want. So I did events here in the U.S., and that was a chance for me to visit. So that's how we, like, kept going back and forth until I moved here and we got married.
Well, what was it like for her to be introduced to the world of Magic the Gathering through you?
Oh, it was
put it in through her lens. What was it like?
We can ask her right now. No, but she's told me about it. She, like, when I told her what I did, she was like, not skeptical, but, you know, you always have stereotypes, right? Like, you stereotype people. Like, we're all, like, human, and we, like, if we don't know,
the stereotype is to be human, honestly.
Yeah, like, if you don't know something, like, your mind goes to the stereotype, and you have, like, preconceptions of what people are gonna be. So I was like, this is, you know, I work for Magic the Gathering, and it's a convention, and, you know, and we're all, I mean, I was nerdy, like, I could not hide it as much as I tried.
And then the images of the, no offense to cosplayers, but the images of cosplay and, like, all these heuristics come up, right?
Yeah. And so we met at the second time we met, she came over to help out at GP Atlanta. So, like, she, like, our second date kinda was her being with me at my booth at GP Atlanta. So it was interacting with all these people, like, you know, to getting, like, hands-on experience with, like, the magic community and the magic world.
Yeah, just, and right it, into the magic pool. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you meet the humans of magic. Like, you have, you know, preconceptions and everything, but, you know, you meet the people. Like, everyone's great. Like, and I feel like that changed her perspective. It's like, you know, I thought it was, you know, a certain way, but, you know, these people are great, and they are very passionate about it. She has a story. She kept this story about someone who was very competitive, like this very competitive guy, but because of health issues, could not do sports, competitive sports. So Magic was, like, his outlet. You know, stuff like that. You meet great people at these events. So that was, like, her introduction to Magic. And now, like, she knows all the names. And, like, from, like, also for, like, selling stuff, like, I'm always, like, repeating. Yeah. Like helping out at the.
She knows like this card is this and yeah. that. Yeah.
And even at Chicago, like one of the ones I signed the most is I call it Stompy Giant because the giant that does stomp and then has the adventure cost.
Bone Crusher Giant.
There you go. And I'm like,
I have played that card many times.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm like, oh yeah, Stompy Giant. And she's like, Bone Crusher Giant. Mm. So, yeah,
she knows the nickname.
Yeah,
she's with it.
Yeah.
This is such a fascinating one because Magic Celebrity is like its own thing, and you're a Magic Celebrity. So was it surreal for her to be like, okay, Victor is just some guy, but in the halls of this convention or GP, he's now suddenly, people are now suddenly lining up for hours to get an interaction with him, like a handshake, like a signature. Like, can you, like, if you put yourself, if you out of body experience yourself, can you imagine, like, through her lens or other, or a commoner, a muggle's lens, like, what that's actually like? Can you describe it? Like, what is Magic Celebrity like for you?
Gosh, that's really, it's difficult to like see it from the outside. Like, I know what people tell me, that, you know, when she introduces me, like, oh, he's like famous, like in a very small niche. he's like famous within like a certain group.
But in that group, you're so famous. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah, that's but even then, like, I feel like, because you know about art, you talk about art, and the people that talk about art, like, know it, but a lot of people don't. Or they see the art, but they're not, like, so in-depth as we are. Like, I'm not as famous as, you know, some of the pro players. I'm not as famous as Gavin or Mark Rosewater, you know.
I don't know about that. I feel like there are certain spaces for Magic Online, online Magic, where they are very well-known names, but I dare say maybe everyday players may know your name more just because you're literally printed on a Magic card.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I feel like now I'm used to it, but I've been doing it for so long. But yeah, it's just crazy. Like, it's always like the first times, like my first event... signing all those cards, like I never thought I would do it. Charging money to sign cards, like that's insane. Because you see it, like I used to see it here at San Diego Comic Con, like all these deal. I'm gonna insult them, but like D-list celebrities that no one cares about anymore, charging $50 for an autograph.
You mean some of the people now on Cameo doing these videos? All kinds of stuff. Yeah.
I saw like one of the Ramones guy that was like in the Ramones for like 2 weeks. Charging $50 for a signature.
Yeah, we're not even talking about Pete Best or anything. Yeah, it's just a 2 week Ramone.
And people like that, I'm like, that's insane. Like, if I'm
50
if,
minutes.
If I ever get to be famous, I'm gonna sign stuff for free. I wish I could, but it's just so much time. And if I did it for free, honestly, they would get scalped.
Yeah.
They would get scalped. And it's just much time.
Here's the point where I'm gonna ask you. Ask you, what's the most memorable or strangest interaction you've ever had with a fan?
Oh wow. James, I have a terrible memory. Like, I remember, like,
I feel like you're pleading the fifth on this.
No, like, I have a great visual memory. Like, I've interacted with fans, you know, 10-8 years ago, and then I see them again and I'm like, yeah, like I remember you.
You remember the face.
I remember the face.
Yeah.
Interactions. Yeah, there's been so many. That's definitely a question that I need to think about, because yeah, like right now, you caught me at my sleepiest and probably not like not my best brain moment. But I would need to think about that. But there's like everyone's like really cool.
Was there anything, any interaction that was like even emotional? Like maybe someone told you how much your work meant to them in some way.
Yeah, there was this person, Lisa. She's a girl that was attending an event, and she came over to my booth. So I was just like, you know, me, and she started asking me questions, and we like chatted back and forth. And she's an artist too, and a writer as well. So we started like talking, and then, you know, she went away, and that was, you know, a normal interaction, like sure. How I go about with everyone at events. And then she came back next day, and she gave me a drawing with a letter written on the back. Like, I still have it. Like, it's one of my treasures. So she drew like a like this fairy ethereal creature. It's really good. And on the back, she said that she was on a very low point mentally at that time, and that, you know, basically, I was human to her, and I was kind, and I was, you know, I was a good person to her. Like, I took time, even though I'm like super famous Victor. That's like how people see me on the outside, but I'm just a guy. And that I was like really nice to her, and she did not want to come back because she felt so awful on day two. She did not want to come back again. Like, she was just depressed and didn't want to do it again. And I get that, like these events are, you know, or if you have social anxiety, like, that's a lot. And like, if you're a woman, a minority, someone like that, you might, you know, feel sometimes, discriminated against. I don't know what she was going through, but then she wrote this letter that I was so kind to her, and because of that, she came over next day too, for the event. And that was really cool. Yeah. There you go. That is really we got cool. The answer.
Yeah. I mean, you really lifted her spirits and kind of made her weaken, right?
Yeah.
Because you just don't know what's going on in someone's headspace.
You never do.
And the smallest thing can really help them.
Yeah. And you never know the impact you have on people. Like, just, you know, being yourself, being kind, and just, you know, pleasant, not a mean person or anything. You're just like, you know, a good person. You can have a great impact on someone.
Is it difficult? Has it been difficult at times to stay cool or calm during magic events? I would imagine that sometimes it can be quite a lot because... even Chicago, I heard. I wasn't there. I was hoping to meet you there, but I heard that it was like incredibly like packed to the gills with
it, just it is people. Taxing on the mind. And just like working, like day one is fairly easy. You're excited. You're happy to be there.
Yeah, you got that like adrenaline kind of thing. Yeah.
Or when I was younger, I mean, I'm old. I'm 35. But I'm not like I was in my 20s. Like, I can't, like, you know, do late nights or anything like that anymore. You, like, start to run out of steam. Especially at the end. Like, having conversations with everyone. Like, signing. Like, doing the work. And at one point, you're like, I'm done. Like, if your social battery runs out, it's out. And you have to, you know, keep doing it. So that's, I feel like that's the hard part. Like, I feel like I've never gotten cranky, but definitely low battery, and I've been like kind of like depleted, tired, and, you know, and I apologize for like if anyone see me like that, but it's just how it is after a long day.
No, that's just part of being human. It's like, I don't think humans are meant to interact with so many people in one day or over a weekend. It's just pretty crazy.
Yeah I'm just waving to my wife. I'm telling her come over
because we want her in front of the camera
or? Yeah, you want to be in front of the camera. We talked about how we met and stuff and your experience with the world of magic.
professional interview?
Yeah, it's very professional.
Hi. Hello. Hi, I'm James. I'm just interviewing Victor, just trying to get his background as a...
Hey, I'm James.
Hi, I'm James. I'm just interviewing from all the way over in China. I'm just trying to get a sense for Victor's story, and he's... it's been super awesome. He's given me a lot of just honest, just that's being Victor.
That's him. Yeah. He doesn't know how else to be, which I love about him.
Yeah. And I was just asking Victor about, like, the weird sort of experience of knowing somebody and then figuring out they're a magic celebrity. Like, what that's actually like. Because outside magic, normal, right? But then in magic, you have people literally lining up to get his signatures. I know you were in Chicago, but and you've, you know, obviously done these events and seen it, but like I was just asking what it was like when you initially knew Victor and your experience and you experienced Magic the Gathering fandom for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, even not knowing Magic much, I still was impressed and surprised to know that people wanted his signature. I thought that was cool. I thought, who is this guy? But yeah, then going to the events, especially after not knowing each other for, you know, too long, I feel like I quickly got a lot of insight into his life and something that was a big part of his life. He played Magic at a young age and met a lot of friends doing that. And then it was his dream to become an artist. So kind of getting to jump in midway through his story and see him living out his dream was really, really cool. And I feel like made me feel connected to him quickly. And also just the community of people of Magic are just really amazing people. I think, you know, there's a bad rap of, you know, nerds or what Magic is or what it means. And nerds are smart and fun. Like, I love games, and Victor's not a great teacher. Otherwise, I probably would play Magic myself.
Or speak Spanish. Yeah.
But it's just an amazing community of people, meeting the other artists and just chatting with fans all day long for 3 days in a row. You know, I would, and I didn't know how to, there's no training on sitting at a booth and selling things, you know, but so I would make mistakes and people would come back and say, hey, you didn't charge me enough. You didn't charge me for this. And I'm like, you know, you didn't, you could have just, I wouldn't have known, you know?
Yeah.
People are just very honest and genuine and authentic, and I felt very lucky to have gotten to meet Victor and step into all of that from the get-go. So, yeah, it was fun.
Mm. Okay. I know you don't want to keep being in this interview, but I just want to ask you one thing before you go. What is one thing about Victor that most people don't know, like that I wouldn't know about Victor that might be interesting to... share, to spill the beans on in this interview?
That's a good question.
These teeth are fake.
That's one. I mean, I don't know. That's tough. The first thing that came to mind, although everyone knows it, but I mean, Victor's from Mexico, but he has no accent, so I feel like people forget that a lot. I do. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know how many, if many people know that Victor is colorblind, I think that that's especially...
Wait, how do you do magic art
exactly?
Then?
You're still mixed green and red.
He doesn't use green, because he can't. And I guess in Photoshop, I mean, he does oil paintings, but he starts his initial sketch in Photoshop, and I guess it tells you the colors?
Yeah, you can color pick, and then and when you paint, you read the tube, and it says what color it is, so you don't... it happened to me one time I mixed, it was like a rust color, and I mixed it with something else, and it got green, and I couldn't tell. Same with yellow and black. If you mix yellow and black, you get green, and I didn't know. And, you know, I get people like her and be like, hey, why is this color? And I'm like...
There was one, he's learned how to maneuver around it, but there was one painting where there was kind of a green fog, and I was like, are they supposed to look like they stink, or what's going on there?
Oh,
and he's like, oh, is this green? I thought it was whatever, but Yeah, I mean, he's obviously done very well for himself, but, you know, even with that. But, yeah. And I think color blindness, especially that red-green, is pretty common among men.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't think too many people know that. I'm not sure.
Or if they didn't, now they do.
He's funny because he's very confident, but he's also very humble.
I can tell.
Yeah.
I can tell that, too.
I mean, you're in an interview, so he's going to be honest and say things as it is, but when we're around other people, I don't know. He's also humble, and he's okay with keeping some things to himself and, like, enjoying some things for himself and not flaunting, you know, everything. Mm-hmm. But he is confident, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ask me a math question. Anything.
I don't even know what to ask. I'm going to give you the wrong answer, but simple, very confident. Oh, I see.
Okay.
So you know your lane, or you know your the domains that you're you have confidence in, right? Which is art or creative work.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, because you have to be confident. I feel like, in order to sell your work, you have to believe in it. And that's the thing, like, other people do. Why can't I? Right? Like, that's one of the first, like, hurdles.
Why not me?
Yeah, people tell you all that, like, people tell us all the time, like, your work's amazing. But, you know, it's hard for you to, like, believe it, especially if you compare yourself to other people, other artists. You're like, not so much, but yeah, you kind of have to believe in yourself.
Mm-hmm. That was a good question. I'm going to be thinking about that now. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for popping in.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for letting me interrupt. Yeah. Here you go.
Thank you, babe.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Hey. Thank you, babe.
Oh, that was an awesome interruption. Definitely keeping all of that in there.
Yeah.
Can we do just a rapid fire round? Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
What's your favorite piece of magic art you've done?
Lord of the Undead.
Yeah. Wow, that was fast. That was just fast. Like that, huh?
Okay. I've been asked those questions.
And why?
A lot.
And why?
One, it was the creative freedom, because it was my secret lair. I could do whatever I wanted. And two, because it was a homage. Do you pronounce that? Homage to the original one, which is the Braum. I have it right here. Right there. I have it right here on my desk. I wouldn't look at it all the time because
it's inspired by that art.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, the sword is the same. Obviously, like, the style is different. Like, I did my own thing, but he was always like one of the ones that I looked up to when I started. I still do. So I wanted to keep like some of the elements, the spirit of what he did, and yeah, I love that art. So I wanted to like translate that to mine. Which is actually, Lord of the Undead is the same, you know, character that they used in Drow New Lich Lord. And he just, like, took the same character, like, the sword and everything. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but they have, like, these, like, weird headdress things, and the sword is the same. So it's the same character, it's just, no, legendary. I don't know if anyone... still knows what creature I'm talking about, but it was pretty big back then because you could do flashback.
That was going to be my next question. Like, who are your biggest artistic influences? So aside from Braum, are there others that come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. James Gurney, I have all of his books on how to paint good. Yeah, he's definitely one. I follow a lot of Western artists online, Mark Maggiore, and he's one of them. Glenn Dean, he's another cowboy artist. Eric Bowman, Michael Whelan, he's one of the OG fantasy guys. Lots of my peers, Ryan Pankost. Yeah, who else do I have here? Mark Zug, I have one of his paintings. I have one of Ryan's in the bathroom. not painting, just a print. But I love that. Yeah, I admire lots of my peers, lots of magic artists. Like I, now that I'm doing this, and now I thought it was easy, but like I admire how like dedicated and hardworking they are. What else? Who else? Yeah, I have like folders and folders of reference. Like, yeah, just a bunch of artists from like current artists to like the old masters or the, you know, Renaissance Caravaggio type peoples. But yeah, I would say like James Gurney. I follow his teachings to a T.
What is one thing that you wish people would know about the world of illustrating for Magic the Gathering that you wish people would know that is not known? Like, what's one thing that you wish you could just tell everybody about what it's like?
There's like one very specific thing that I'm like trying to get the word out on right now, which is the paintings. And I feel like it is starting to like catch on, but it's not as big as like it is to me. Cause like for me, that's like my whole livelihood, like the paintings. Mm-hmm. And I wish people knew that there was like this segment of collectibles. Because I see like people collecting all sorts of like rarities and not rarities, like, you know, weird things like misprints and like rare cards, graded cards, all sorts of things. And, you know, the best thing is a magic painting because there's just one. Like, mm-hmm. There's however many Black Lotuses out there, you know, 200, 300. I know people have made like random numbers, and you know there's the one ring, but also I don't know. Also, that painting is one of one.
Yeah, you're saying every Magic original painting is one of one, so that is the truly ultra rare,
yes,
collectible
by just merit of what it is. It was not manufactured to be one of scarce. It was not, you know, planned to be scarce. It's just because it's a painting. There's just going to be one. Even if you try to replicate it, it's going to be a little different. So, yeah, that's one of the things that I wish more people knew. I feel like, you know, people assume, right? But I feel like it could be more widely known. Mm-hmm. Especially people that collect, like, rare stuff.
As a Magic player who plays the game,
mm-hmm.
does that inform the amount of time or effort that you spend on the art? For example, knowing that a piece of art is going to be on a common versus a rare versus this is for a major game-changing card, or this card or this art might be more desirable in some way. You don't know 100%, but you may know.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, long-winded question here, but like, does that inform your decisions as an artist?
And my answer should be no. I have to tell you no. you know, professional.
All right.
Yeah.
The official answer is no.
The official answer is no, but also, you never know unless it's a reprint. And if it's a reprint, it's usually good. I don't think I've done many reprints right now. But yeah. Yes, you should always try to do, you know, your best work regardless. But I feel like you know, back to the question of like finding joy or finding fun in whatever you do, I feel like if you do get a common, you know, you never know it's going to be a common because they can shift rarities, and they've done that a lot. Like, I know with my pieces, I've gotten stuff that I thought it was a common, then shifted to mythic, stuff like that.
Common to mythic. Okay, yeah, like, I was expecting like, common still, to uncommon.
Like, oops, I'm bumping. And like, you send out the art, and then, like, there's still, like, time for them to adjust. So, you, like, you don't know, like, they can, like, bump it up and, or, you know, change the power level. Like, they can make it better, like, after the fact. It doesn't happen often, but sometimes it does. But I feel like I haven't gotten an assignment that I'm like, that's a common anymore. I feel like I'm on a streak right now, especially if they're legendaries, you know, they're going to be rare. and I've gotten a lot of those lately. But having said that, if I were to get something that I think is going to be a common official answer, no.
Right on. And not a rapid fire question.
Okay.
Tell me about this new project that you're working on.
So I always had a story in mind, but I'm not a writer. And I don't want to write. Like, I started writing like a novel, like a normal novel, a couple times. Like, I've had the story and like trying to like write it, but I'm not good at it because I haven't like done it. I feel like I would be good at it if I was interested in it, but the truth is that I'm not. So I want to, like, I have a story, and I had like this light bulb moment when I watched Mad Max Fury Road for like the umpteenth time, and I'm like, and I remember like they talked about that it had no like traditional script, but it was a storyboard, and I'm like, huh, like I would want to do that. Like I'm a visual artist, and I paint fast, sorta. So I can probably like do that. Like, why not? So I'm not doing a storyboard. I'm doing like a regular comic book, but it's gonna be more. That was actually one of the inspirations. I got a Miyazaki manga, and it's mostly art. Like, it has text and story. Like, it is a story. It is a normal book, but it's very art heavy. So I want to do that. And it's going to be a mix of sci-fi and post-apocalyptic and some fantasy tropes, but it's going to be Western, and it's going to have dinosaurs and fantasy, some fantasy races.
When can we expect this graphic novel or this work to come out?
I don't know. I did the outline. I wrote it. I need to do a rewrite because there's like a little plot thing that I don't like. But I'm just doing that right now, and then it's baby steps. Like, I have no idea. I don't know what I don't know. Like I want to do 80 pages maybe, but I don't know the amount of work that's gonna take. So
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's done when it's done, right?
Yeah,
when you feel it's done, especially when it's your baby. So you take your time.
Yeah, and I'm not in no rush to like monetize it or sell it. Like, that's going to be a passion project, and like I do want to, you know, not take a long time because I need to work as well. I need to make money as well. So like I would want to, you know, just do it like at a normal speed, like same speed that I would do a magic illustrator illustration or something else. Excellent. 2026.
80 pages. Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
absolutely. So Victor, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. You too. This was fun.
Yeah, it's been so much fun. I need to talk to artists more often, or
yeah,
artists as chill and cool as you are.
You should. Yeah. They're all cool. We're all cool.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
I wish you all the best.
Thank you. You too.
In your other projects.
Thank you so much.